From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 18th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I'm still waiting for my chocolates and flowers.
You're going to get one of those edible arrangements because we're going healthy this year. Sorry.
Oh, I love those. Hey, did you know that the headquarters of that place is located in my hometown?
Is it really?
Yeah, we used to have a bank up on this hill. It was called Dime Savings Bank back in the day, and it looked like a castle. It was built out of these red bricks and everything. And then when that bank went away, as all banks did back then, they moved in. And that's where their headquarters were located, right in my home. And my hometown is like nothing. It's like a small little, the only thing it's famous for is having Choate Rosemary Hall in the town, Wallingford, Connecticut. But that's where they were located. They may have moved since then. But, huh?
And Chris Cosenza.
Oh, and me. Yeah, of course. I'm the most famous person coming out of there. But yeah, edible arrangements. I expect one to land at my doorstep pretty soon. And I want to be home when it comes. There's nothing worse than having edible arrangements land at your doorstep and you haven't been there all day. And then you show up and you've got old fruit and melted chocolate all over your porch, you know. But we're talking about, of course, our 16-year anniversary of the show, right? That's crazy. 16 years ago, we started this show. I keep thinking it's 2004 when we started, but it was 2005.
2005, yep.
And then our actual company was 13 years ago last week when we left the Times and ventured out in the worst economy since the Depression to start a business. I don't know what we were thinking.
So we went from the worst recession to the worst pandemic. That's the bookends of the company.
That's right. That's exactly right. Genius. Anyway, happy anniversary, buddy. I don't think we'll make 17, but hey.
Hey, I don't know. You didn't think we were going to make 16 because
that's
tried
true.
To kill us off 4 or 5 years ago. So
you keep dragging me kicking and screaming into the next year somehow. I don't know. You know, we're starting to get emails from people saying, hey, I want to send you a hand of the week, but I'm sorry if it extends the business another week, Chris. You know, it's hilarious. But I was thinking that if somebody was born the day we started the business, they can drive now.
Yeah. So, I'm curious here. We still have maybe 5 or 6 listeners from the beginning of the show, right? So
probably.
I am curious if any of them have a anti-up baby, as we'll call it now.
And
picture up.
And does that baby have an Ante Up logo tattoo somewhere?
Yes.
That'd be the quinella, I think, as that would be called.
I don't think we have anybody that's 16 with an Ante Up tattoo.
We did have a young, the couple that you ran into last week, right? Their kid. They was pretty young. He was like 18 or 19 or something. He was pretty young to get a tattoo, and he got one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He probably was the youngest one. Yeah.
Yeah, easily. But anyway, happy anniversary.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the edible arrangement.
Hope he gets there. When it mistyped the address. All right, the World Series of Poker has finalized the schedule for this fall series, which runs September 30th to November 23rd. Some highlights include the main event will have 4 starting flights, November 4th through the 7th. 18 bracelet events will be televised, including at least 15 hours of the main event by new broadcast partner CBS Sports. On October 1st, a $500 event called the Reunion will have a $5 million guarantee requiring more than 10,000 entries to cover.
Man.
On October 10th, a $1,000 flip-and-go tournament will feature all players all in on the first hand with 3 cards, choosing 2 of them. Each table's winner is automatically in the money, and the tournament will play out normally after that. On October 27th and 28th, the Senior Championship will have 2 starting flights for the first time. On October 31st, also known as Halloween, I think, the Players' Championship will kick off with a 9th game added, no limit, deuce to 7, triple draw. On November 7th.
Single draw.
No limit, deuce to 7, single draw. Yeah,
right.
On November 17th, all Poker Hall of Fame members will get a free entry in the $1,979 Poker Hall of Fame Bounty event, which is open to anyone. Each of the Hall of Famers will have a bounty on their head equal to the year they were inducted.
Cool.
And on November 19th, the largest buy-in PLO event in WSOP history, $50,000 will be held. I'll be there.
Yes.
And automated clearinghouse, or ACH, has been added to the available payment options to buy into tournaments. Wow. So lots of good stuff to talk about here.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. Of course, I want to start with the Reunion, which is aptly named, I guess, because they're considering it, you know, hey, this is a big deal that we're all getting back together playing some serious poker here, and so let's get as many people as possible to show up and play for $5 million. So that's a great idea, and I hope they make it. I think they'll have more than 10,000 entries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's pretty ballsy to come up with a $5 million guarantee.
Yeah, that's huge.
$500 event. I mean, that's really in the price point of really every poker player who has a dream of playing a World Series, I think.
Yeah.
$500, I think, is, I mean, I'm sure they, I mean, some of the online events are probably a little bit cheaper, but, and circuit events obviously are cheaper, but $500, if you had a dream to go out to Vegas and say you played in the World Series, that's the one you can start saving up for now and easily be able to do. And if you get a good run of cards, that's going to be a sweet payout.
I know. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah, that's a seven-figure return on that $500 investment. So,
unreal.
Good luck to the winner, unless it's me. Well, so.
I did want to ask you. Shame on me. I was so excited about our anniversary, and I was waiting for my flowers and candy that I forgot to look into this more deeply, but. Can you tell me a little more about this flip and go? Like, do they get to see the flop before they choose the two of the three, or they have to choose two of the three, and then this card is like pineapple? What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, I don't. This is the first I've heard of it. Apparently, it's super popular on GG Poker, which we wouldn't know because we don't get GG Poker here in the States. So that's the reason they added it. But I'm looking at it, and you're right. I have some questions too. I'm assuming that you get dealt three cards pre-flop, and you discard one, and then you flip them. Because that's what it's flip and go, right? So right. That's my assumption. What I don't get, and obviously it's super popular, according to the press release on GG Poker, so people love this thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't see poker players playing this, right?
Like, I know.
I see the guy at the blackjack table, the craps table, the roulette players saying, all right, $1,000 and I hope I win, and then play it out. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking. Maybe there's a psychology here of you play one hand and you could be in the money.
Yeah, that is kind of wild, but that's right? The coin flip. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So now obviously you got to be nine people or eight people at the table to do that, but there's no skill. I guess there is skill in choosing which card to throw away. I'm like, I don't know necessarily how hard that would be. I mean, it's just like pineapple, I guess. Except pineapple, you've seen the flop, right? So,
Well, no. Pineapple, you don't. Crazy pineapple, you see the flop. And then right. Discard. So,
no one plays regular pineapple. That's why it's not
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess you'd have to decide if you have suited cards or not. Whether they're, I mean, I think you'd have to stay suited, right?
Well, if you got a pair, what do you do then? Do you stick with aces? Do you stick with, you know, if you have ace king, just somehow rare that you get that amazing hand, but do you go with the ace and just hope you can beat? Because, you know, when we used to teach poker 101, even on the ship, you know, I used to love taking a pair of aces and then dealing out 18 cards to, you know, and then doing the whole board and show you how many times aces doesn't win. So there's some definitely some thought process that has to go in there.
I would not keep a pair. I would go for. In fact, I would. If I have aces, I would break the aces up and go with one of the other cards and hope it's suited. Because you would have to win. You have to beat the entire table, right? So a hand that has a potential of really having a big hand. Now, obviously, if you have aces, you could flop quads. So it's not like it's impossible to flop a big hand with that. But I would be like looking for flush possibility. Because again, that's the average winning hand, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a straight, actually, but straight or flush is what I'd be shooting for. So, yeah, I would definitely go in for connected cards, and suited connectors would be fantastic. That's what I would shoot for.
I don't know. I don't know. I think if I were lucky enough to get king-king or ace-ace, I might actually go with it. And because, remember, it's not like it's a random... You know what I mean? I don't know. I still think ace-ace or king-king is the way to go. I think your odds still increase dramatically when you have a pair over not having a pair of random five cards being dealt. I don't know. I'd have to research it.
When we get Frankie gets this home game going, sometime soon, hopefully, we will do a couple of flip-and-go hands for fun, and we'll hold off the discards that we had, right?
Right.
And then we can analyze how well it worked, because that would be interesting.
And you could definitely play this as a cash game thing, too, if you wanted to. Like, you could just ante up $5 each or something, and then winner takes all.
Yeah. And then take $2 in the pot and put it for the Kentucky Derby. So. Really get Chris worked up for that. Yeah. No, I'm sure there's somebody who's done if it's as popular as it sounds like, somebody's done the math already on this. I don't know if they posted the math. You know, if it's so new, you probably wouldn't want to publish the math so you could, you know, win. But so, yeah. So, all right. So now we just talked about how there's no strategy. We just realized there's a ton of strategy in that first one. But,
all right. But
then you got to hold on and hope it holds up so you can finish out the tournament. So definitely interesting. So a little carnival gamish for me, but that's all right. That's the World Series. There's 88 events. So they're not all for me. Right.
88. I know we didn't even really talk about that. That's incredible.
Yeah. 88 bracelet events. I forgot to put that on there. Yeah. Sorry.
It's crazy.
It's kind of also crazy. This is the first year the Seniors Championship has two starting flights. Cause that's always a big event.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird that that's never happened before, and I haven't even thought about it.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. That's crazy.
And I'm still not old enough for that yet, so.
What is it, 50?
I don't know if it's 50 or 55.
I think it's 50. I think I'm old enough now.
Yeah, if it's 50, you'll be in there.
That was my goal, was to retire from Antiup at 50 and play in it, but apparently I can't do that because I'll be 51 by the time this one rolls around.
Oh, man, and the Players' Championship adding that ninth game. Now that I think about it, it's kind of weird that that game wasn't in there because that's the game, like, all that the pros say.
Yeah.
It's like the one that separates the players from the Dreamers, right?
Yeah, that's the one they always wanted to win when they said they were, like, getting interviewed. We always talk about whenever we talk to, like, Jen Harmon when she won it and all that stuff. They always say, yeah, that's the game that the pros really covet, and it's odd that it wasn't in all this time. You're right. Crazy.
Because that's really the only true stare you down poker game. I mean, you have zero information really in that game.
Yeah.
And you have to like make a decision on what you're going to do there. So,
yeah.
Definitely by far the most creative, and I really like this Hall of Fame event. Won the 1979 buy-in, which is really clever. And then you know, whenever they got, and they're all bounties, and so you know the newer members of the Hall of Fame have more money put on their head, right? So, which I think is kind of interesting, because you know, not that they're necessarily better because they're younger, but probably in the aggregate, that's probably the case, right?
Some it's funny because the newer players or younger players or whatever they would be, they probably still have their cognitive skills, so it'd be hard to knock them out, so you're getting more money for that. But then you're like, I don't want to knock out the old guy because I don't get enough money, you know, which is hilarious because it's only a matter of $20. But it is interesting that they do. So who do you target? I guess you target the older guys, right, because they might not be as good as the newer guys.
I mean, you have to be lucky enough to have one of them at your table, too. Remember, there's only like 40, I'm guessing off the top of my head, 40 probably living.
Yeah, 40, 10 times 2. So maybe there's 40, 50 guys. And they have to still be alive and still playing. So you're right, maybe 40.
Yeah. The dead ones would be the easiest ones to pick off. That's probably who I would blind them out. but yeah, so I mean, the chances, I mean, one is a scratch-off lottery ticket chance of getting one of these guys at your table. Yeah. You know, at least initially. I mean, obviously, as the tournament goes on, if they stay in and they fail to win those, you have a better chance. But
well, is it still a regular bounty tournament though? And then those guys just happen to have bigger bounties on them.
I that wasn't my understanding, but it very well could be. For all I know,
I think that probably makes sense because otherwise, you're going to be like bummed. You know what I mean? Yeah, you might not have a chance to play. Why are you even playing this event if there's only 40 guys and there's 5,000 people in the event? So I think it is a regular bounty event, but I'd have to look into it.
Too. I mean, you're still going to win a lot of money, too.
I know. It's just they call it a bounty event. I feel like it is, but maybe not.
I mean, it's kind of like the Shooting Stars at Bay 101 back in the day, right? So, I mean, I don't think that was a bounty tournament. It was just bounties on the stars. But
I love that on the notes, it corrected your thing to say Poker Hall of Family bounty event instead of Hall of Fame. I'm fixing that now.
Oh my God! That's
it says Hall of Family. I started thinking, oh, does that mean like Todd Brunson has a bounty on his head, and
every Hall of Famer, spouse, kids,
coming out of the woodwork to play in this event?
Well, yeah. So in general, very excited that the series is back and the way it should be. Obviously, it's not in the normal time frame, but that's the least of I think anybody's concerns.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
All right, Harlan Miller, a retired North Dakota office supply store owner, was supposed to be in Montana where his niece was getting married. He said he, quote, had a feeling, if out of poker tournament and went to Vegas instead. He went on to win the Mid-States Poker Tour main event at the Venetian for $367,000 and $367,801. Miller, who shared some of his score with Las Vegas homeless people, said his niece will be getting a much better present now, and that he probably wasn't missed at the ceremony since his 18 siblings were in attendance.
Holy cow. Oh, wow. That's, I mean, if you're not tight with your niece, you know, whatever, but if she's like your favorite niece or you're her favorite uncle or something, geez, you know, seriously. I mean, I'm happy for the guy. He won, whatever. I mean, that is like one of those Hollywood type stories where you just had a feeling and then you do it.
Kept getting better from the headline, because I saw the headline a couple days ago, and then I didn't actually read the article to start doing the show notes, and I'm like, all right, one, I want to figure out, was the guy in the wedding? Because that would have been funny. He's like, hey, sorry, I can't make it. Can I get my deposit on my tux back, please? And then he's like, oh, I had a feeling. I mean, how many times have people said that? I mean, that's a gambling thing. That's not a poker thing, right?
Exactly.
I'm like, so sorry, I'm going to go to Vegas instead and have a happy winning niece. And then obviously, I mean, we knew about Headline 81, but then making it rain for homeless people as he walked around town, that's pretty cool. And then finding out that I'm like, so the whole time I was like, boy, this is really tough to explain. I mean, everybody's relationship with their relatives is different, right? So,
right.
But from my frame of reference, I mean, I can't imagine going to my niece and saying, hey, thanks for the invite. Decline. Gonna go play poker. It's like, I got a feeling. But then to find out he has 18 siblings, I mean, how's that even possible? Wow. That's a rough life for that mom.
Well, I mean, it is North Dakota. What else are you going to do there?
Yeah, you wouldn't be inside a lot. Yeah,
yeah. What else are you going to do? One thing was weird. Did this guy have a New York tie? Because it was on the Daily News, and it says the headline said New York poker player skipped his wedding. So,
oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
I wonder if he's got a New York tie as well. And now that's a bigger deal. I mean, if you're going to fly from New York to Montana, it's a lot harder to fly there than it is to fly to Vegas. You know, I mean, I don't know. But it's something else that he won that event, you know. Sometimes I wonder if these stories are reverse engineered, you know.
Reverse engineered.
You know, like the guy won, and then he's like, oh, by the way, I could have gone to my niece's wedding this weekend. And then he just says, I had a feeling, you know. You wonder if it's that way or not. Like, I want to see the interview with the guy before the tournament and see him say, I have a feeling about this tournament coming up, so I'm going to skip the wedding, you know. I don't know. Sometimes I just wonder.
Everybody has a good story after they win, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. All right, poker player Dennis Bleeden, who we previously told you was convicted of embezzling $22 million from a digital marketing company, has been sentenced to 79 months in prison. The company Style Hall did not survive the embezzlement and closed in 2019.
Good. I don't know what else to say about this, but good.
All right, so here's the only thing I'm going to say about the criminal justice system is this whole white-collar thing. It does bother me a little bit that this guy stole $22 million, put an entire company out of business, probably put a lot of employees out of work, and gets 79 months.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just doesn't seem like it's enough. But
yeah, what's that, like 6.5-7 years?
It's 6.5 years. So yeah. Now I know. Make the argument that generally these white collar criminals are the ones that are going to fare worse in prison, you know, because they have a different lifestyle that's now changed. But and I'm sure, you know, he has to pay back some of those with all $17 he has left of it, right?
So that's the other thing I wondered about, was how much money was left, how much got returned, if any, you know.
It just doesn't seem fair to me. But yeah, you know, hey.
I mean, I'm glad he's in prison, but you're right. I think the sentence was not exactly justice, but I don't know. It's hard to describe what each person has their own version of what is justice, you know? So, but I agree with you. That does not seem long enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Here's this week update on poker room reopenings in Delaware. Delaware Park Casino has reopened its poker room. That gives us 253 reopened poker rooms. And remember to go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen. And send us updates at editor@antiupmagazine.com so we can include them in the weekly e-blast that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com.
Annie Updates, Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antioch Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask Call the Four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antioch logo designs on merchandise at antiochmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Antioch Magazine, Antioch PokerCast, or Antioch Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or Call the Floor submission, email us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com or post in the Antioch Fans group on Facebook. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com. They haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor at the end of the week. We send them something cool. Kind of say each week, but sometimes we don't do it each week. I think we
well, each week we have one. Huh?
We try to do it each week. It's our friend Ed Riddler. Riddler, he says, you were talking about a poker room book where the guy was making suggestions to managers how to run their rooms, and it reminded him of the first time he said, my brother and I went to a casino for poker. We drove an hour for a $60 tournament, but there were only 7 people signed up. The manager told us normally they drew about 200, but that weekend they had horse races, so the poker room was dead. They had one cash table playing, and they offered to refund the money to the 9 of us, or we could play if we chose. Obviously, driving an hour, I wanted to play, and the other players were staying at the hotel and wanted to play as well. The manager then told us it was our game and offered a payout structure of first and second, or winner and take all. By a vote of 7-2, we voted to pay 2. Now for the part that reminded me of your show. He said, a player in the cash game came over and said, make it winner take all and I'll play. Right before we were going to start, the manager explained that if he didn't want to play in the format we chose, then he didn't have to. He then began harassing us because we didn't have the gamble in us to take a chance on him taking our money. The jerk. The manager instructed him to go back to his game or leave. We got down to three-handed, and he stood behind another player and said, with cards like his, I would have taken all your money. That was the final straw, and he was removed from the poker room. Given that first experience, it took my brother and me a long time to be willing to go back to a casino because that player felt he could run everything better than the manager. On a side note, my brother finished fourth, I knocked him out, and I finished third after running trips into a straight and pocket tens into queens. The poker was fun. The obnoxious player was not.
Yeah. This is what I told him is that, I mean, this is a classic example of when you have a really good manager versus a not so good manager, right? We talked about this on the show before too. The managers that say, you know, I listen to my players, and the ones that like, you know, try to accommodate every player end up not accommodating any player. Is kind of my thought, right? So
yeah.
This particular guy, he was probably a regular. The manager, it sounded like, dealt with it correctly initially, but then allowed the guy to hang around and taunt people when he shouldn't have. But imagine the difference if the manager just like, hey guys, all right, you guys took a vote and now we're going to switch it up because this guy wants again, right? Because he's trying to make that player happy, and then you end up making 7 other players unhappy. So that's kind of the lesson I'm taking out of this. And it's unfortunate. I mean, and this is a good example of you know, Ed and his was his brother was
his brother,
and who probably would have frequented that poker room quite often,
right?
Had they not had this bad first experience, and that's that. When you're talking about the bean counters that are trying to shut down poker rooms and put slot machines there, those are the kind of beans that add up to make sure that doesn't happen. So
yeah. I mean, how ridiculous does this guy think? Does he really think that he's going to sway 7 people to change their mind? You know, or well, I mean, I guess it would be, well, if he was 3, so you need another 2 or 3 people to change their mind just because he was joining. You know, I mean, it didn't make any sense. The guy was just probably drunk or obnoxious, and you know, it's just ridiculous. And I, of course, there's no way the poker room manager would have been like, "Oh, this guy wants to play, so now I'm going to, you know, null your vote." You know, and that. That just wasn't going to happen. It's just, he's right. I mean, there are obnoxious people in the world, and they just happen to be in poker rooms too. And
yeah,
you know, it surprised me too, because a lot, I'm not intimidated in a poker room, but I certainly don't want to go to a table of people and piss them all off. You know what I mean? Because I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, somebody at that table can kick my ass, I'm sure. You know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't walk up to a table and be like, oh, you're all just chicken, you know, and say, oh, yeah, let's go outside and see who's chicken. And then you're like, sorry, you know, sorry, you can play your 7-2, you know, vote game, whatever. But I don't know. Some people just have it in them to just be obnoxious and it doesn't matter to them. You know, I don't get it. I
mean, to me, it's pretty clear that this is a guy who lives his life with no one telling him he's wrong, right? Or people telling him wrong, he just doesn't care, so he just never learned anything different, right? So those kind of people you can't really deal with other than just ignoring them. But the illogical part of his argument was they just had a vote of 9 people, right?
Yeah.
And 7 of them said they wanted to pay 2. And then he jumps in, which would be an extra player that they'd have to knock out, and he thinks that they would change and play winner take all.
Yeah. There's no what because
$60 minus the entry fee.
Right, exactly. And then dividing it, well, I mean, it's winner take all, but still, it's ridiculous.
Doesn't make any, I mean, it's just such an illogical question to ask anyhow. It would be like, you know, I can't even come up with something off the top of my head that makes sense right now, but just, you know, thank you.
Well, I'm sorry that Ed and his brother were so put off by it that it took them a while to get back to one. It's like, if you go to the grocery store and there's some obnoxious guy there trying to get into the 10 items line with 12 things, you're not going to say, oh, he was yelling at the register and saying this is, you're not going to not go back and eat. You know, you're going to get your food again. So to me, I'd have been like, ah, that was a random thing. I'm still going back. You know, I'm not going to not go back because there's one guy, you know, and it's an hour drive too. Right? That's what would dissuade me more than.
Yeah. But that's the kind of stuff is like, you know, if people aren't committed to something, it's very easy for them to decide that they don't need to go back, right? I mean, how many restaurants have you gone to and you probably caught them on a bad day or got their worst server or whatever it was, and it was an anomaly, but it just wasn't a good experience. And you're like, all right, I've got 4 million other restaurants within a 10-minute drive of my house. Why do I need to give a second chance to that one, right?
Exactly. So
that's the unfortunate thing about the world now is that you don't get a second chance to make a first impression actually is really, really important these days. So,
yeah.
And that was a problem here that this manager unfortunately just didn't manage the situation well enough to keep Ed and his brother from coming back. So,
okay, we got a new O'Malley's move. Let's lift our spirits and take a listen.
Welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we've extended ourselves a bit and are playing in a 5-5 No Limit Hold'em home game. The buy-in is 1,000 and the game is six-handed. We sit with 1,200 up 200. The blinds post, the under-the-gun limps. This player is loose and passive. He's pretty much a calling station. He bought into the game for 1,000 and currently sits with 875. We're next to act and look down at the ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds. We make it $20 to go, which is a standard raise for the game. The button folds, the small blind calls, the big blind folds, and the under the gun calls. The pot is around $60, and the flop is the 10 of clubs, 8 of spades, 5 of hearts. The small blind and under the gun check to us. This is about as dry as it can get. I think we need to bet here. We make it $40 to go. The small blind folds, but the under the gun calls quickly. The pot is 140 and the turn is the deuce of hearts. Once again, the under the gun checks. We're going to make another play at this. We bet 100. Again, the under the gun calls. The pot is 340 and the river is the 4 of diamonds. The under the gun checks. So, are we triple barreling here? What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations a podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Our old-time friend Vic G is back, Chris.
Wow.
A number of hands. We're not going to do them all in order like we've done before because we have so many other people sending us hands. But we hear a lot more from Vic here.
Cool.
Coming weeks. So
cool.
All right. So this particular hand, he's playing 1-2 no limit hold'em at his local Florida poker room, 7-handed due to COVID-19. The button puts on the $5 straddle. He says he's the worst player at the table, so for him, it's all about getting lucky. The small blind is the loosest player at the table and calls the extra $4. The big blind is a tight passive player and calls the extra $3. Under the gun folds, and we are next to act from middle position with the 8 of spades, 8 of clubs. And he says we sit with about 550 and the cutoff, and only the cutoff has us covered.
Well, it's funny because we kind of know how Vic G plays, but we're going to analyze this hand as how we would play. So I don't know if I'm never really very comfortable raising with 8-8 just because this particular hand is going to play bigger than a normal 1-2 hand. You know, we have a straddle and callers, and for us to force somebody out now with 8-8 probably isn't going to happen. So I think we're playing a huge pot with a middling pair. It's just eights. So I'm tending to thinking about maybe, you know, set mining, and then as it gets around the table with the betting, if I know the person that, if someone decides to raise like the actual straddler in this case, I might even pop it again to show that I trapped him because I don't believe him. But generally when I have 8-8 and it's sort of like a big limping pot, I'm looking to hit a set and win a big pot. So I don't think, I mean, I think Vic was going to raise here, but I'm just guessing. But I'm going to limp with it.
Yeah, this is a classic set mining here. But yeah, I think you're right. He's probably definitely going to raise here. The other reason that I'm almost always set mining with the eights here anyhow, but we have that straddler left to act after us, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, not always. Generally, when you're a straddler, you're going to raise it with a wide range of hands. So there's a fair to decent chance we're already going to face a raise with this hand anyhow. So, you know, if our raise convince the straddler not to re-raise, there's some psychology there that would be a reason to raise. But without knowing that right now, I'm not looking to play a big pot with this. I'm looking to set mine. So I'm going to call.
A little trivia for you. Do you know how many times in my career I've straddled willingly? Zero.
It's probably the same amount as me.
Zero.
I honestly do not remember a straddle that I've ever done.
Right, there's the pressure of like the home game or like the, it's the last round, you know, whatever. But in the actual casino, never.
Actually, I just realized I lied. There were a couple hands where everybody straddled, and so I got caught up in that. So
right, but that's not willingly. Like that's not you just making that of your own accord.
Well, I had the choice. I could have not been the one guy that straddled, right? So I still have a choice. But it's not the same as like what you're saying here, where the one guy straddles, right?
Right. No, with no pressure. Right.
I've never solo straddled.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, of your own volition, where you just said, oh, you know what? I feel like straddling. No, I've never done that. You've never done that.
No, yep.
And we named our company Annie Up, not Straddle.
And we also haven't, like, taunted players at a sit-and-go for not letting us change the rules of the
game. Exactly.
Not saying those kind of players are exactly the same, but, yeah, those players are exactly the same. all right, so Ari said we sit with about 550 with only the cutoff head as is covered, and he says, let me just say that it doesn't matter if we're up or down for the session, if we're riding a winning streak, or if Bitcoin is over 50K. Bitcoin's over 50K now?
Wow.
None of that matters, he says. The hijack is a tourist down here to have a good time and figures, why not give poker a try? After all, how different can it be from the home games he's played all his life? The cutoff is the only other thinking player at the table who's been pretty playing solid poker and catching cards. We decided to set mine and toss in a $5 chip.
No way.
Wow. See, we're a little Victory rusty here.
Wow. I think COVID's made him rusty.
He says, but we expect the cutoff to raise with a wide range to punish all of us limpers. The tourist folds and the cutoff counts out $35 and slides it forward. The button, small blind, and big blind muck in quick succession, and the action is back on us.
Okay, so if we knew this guy was going to do it, we probably knew he was going to do it because that's the way he plays, so that means it's less likely he has a hand that's better than eights. So if Vic is feeling particularly Vic, he might pop it again, make it like 105. So, but me, I think I'm still set mining. So I'm probably just going to call.
Yeah, I'm going to say probably the proper play here is to raise, to let the cutoff know, hey, yeah, we know what you're up to, but I've actually got a real hand. And, you know, depending on how crazy they get, but he did describe him as the only other thinking player at the table. So I'm less likely to think that that's going to work there. So I'm probably just going to make the call here.
Yeah, I think he's got two big cards. You know, I don't feel like, I mean, it, obviously you don't know. He could do this with any two cards. But it feels like it's two big cards, and he's like taking this chance to get all this free money, hoping we all fold out. And when we didn't fold out, now he knows, all right, I have to hit my flop. If it comes low cards, I'm going to be pretty powerful with this hand, I think.
Well, I mean, the other argument to raise, too, is that this is the reason you straddle, right? You put that extra money in. I mean, the extra, what, $3 is not the big deal in the straddle. The concern is that the straddler gets to act last and raise, right? So that's why you do it. So, again, this is why I always say I never understand when people straddle and then don't raise. I mean, that's if you're straddling, you have to raise with any hand. That's really what you're trying to do. So in that case, you know, if this is what this guy's doing, then popping him here again is forcing him to play with an inferior hand or fold and pick up, you know, a good 50, 60 bucks here, right? So I don't know. I mean, maybe in more thought that I would probably raise here. I just don't have the stones to do that, and that's why I play limit poker.
I know. That's why I don't. That's why I don't straddle.
All right. So Vic says we consider a 3-bet, but it would have to be sizable, as even a 3x raise would be $105. Well, see, that's exactly what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I think that may have the cutoff calling as he has position on us. So maybe 4 to 5x. This might also commit our stacks on any flop. I pause to recall that the cutoff making a similar bet an hour or so earlier where we 3-bet with pocket jacks, only to see him jam with pocket queens. That didn't turn out so well. So we decided to just call the extra $30. $77 in the pot. After the rake, we see a flop of 6 of hearts, 7 of clubs, 8 of hearts. And we are first to act.
Well, this is sweet. I mean, top set. Of course, the guy could have, you know, straight and flush possibilities, but, yeah. I mean, this is a nice little flop for us. The thing is, now, if we know how this guy plays, then I'd like to know if this is the type of guy that, once he takes control of a hand, he c-bets. If he does, I'm checking to him. If he doesn't, if he takes offense to someone betting into him, I want to bet into him. So I really need to know how this guy plays, if I can. If I don't, generally, I'm checking and letting him bet and then raising, just because I realize check raise is like sort of an ABC kind of play here, but this is a really wet board. And if I know he's going to put money out, I'm going to let him do it. And if he's not going to put money out, then I'm going to put money out. So it just depends on what kind of player he is. So I have both scenarios covered.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have to be convinced that he's going to bet the check here. If I'm not convinced that he's going to bet, then I have to bet here, because there's just too many cards are going to come that are going to mess us up. So.
Yeah.
All right, here it says, since the cutoff took the betting lead pre-flop, we instinctively check it over to him. And he asks, what's the plan when he c-bets? Well, that's what we're expecting, I hope. So I would be raising. he says the cutoff plays with his chips a bit before tapping the table. This was the first time he didn't c-bet. All right, so this is our worry, right? This is why we don't check here, because now we have to be really worried. Any cards that are right around the cards on the flop, then we have to worry about them walking into a straight. The heart comes, that sucks. There's a lot of stuff we're not going to want to see here, right?
Yeah, plus if something over our card comes, then maybe he's now hit a set. We don't like this at all. We're hoping for a deuce.
All right, with $77 in the pot, the turn is the ace of hearts. So our board now is the 6 of hearts, 7 of clubs, 8 of hearts, ace of hearts. Ugh. And we are our first to move.
All right, so I don't think it's a flush. I think a guy who bets like this and plays like this is betting a flush. Plus, he's, you know, I mean, to check behind is sometimes it's fishy, but in this case, I feel like if this guy had a hand, he'd want to protect this hand. He didn't. Does that mean he's either made a straight or he is weary of us? He knows how well we play and he thinks we're trapping him. So, again, now I think we have to come alive. I realize that the ace of hearts could hit him, and then you check to him, and he's going to definitely bet. But at the same time, that's 3 hearts on the board. I don't think he has a flush. I think he would have bet a flush, like I said. I don't think he has a straight. I think he would have bet a straight draw. So I feel like if he has the ace and we're betting into him, he might raise us. So I'm going to bet into this guy, and I'm going to bet like $50.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he didn't bet for the first time when he should have been c-betting really has got me curious. I mean, there's lots of things that could be happening here. I mean, obviously, Vic is a really good player. This player has been described as a thinking player, so he knows Vic's a good player, right? So mm-hmm. I think he's probably worried that we flop big like we did, right? So we can't play coy anymore. I think we gotta put the bet out, and, you know, we'll see. I mean, he could pop us here with a naked heart, just trying to push us off of this, but that... Actually, I think the ace is kind of an action killer for us, I think. So, so that's one more reason to bet, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. So Vic says this completes the front door flush, but the ace either hits his hand or it's a scared card. So he said.
Yep.
He says, we like this card. He raised big preflop, so an ace is certainly in his range. He's also a thinking player, knows that I may use the ace as a scared card and bet. We decide on the same $35 bet, and he quickly calls.
Okay. Well, and that's not bad. I don't feel like he's got a made hand already, but it could be. The quick call usually means, okay, I got a backup or something. It could mean that they already have a hand, but if he had like a baby flush, he'd want to protect it. So a quick call means he could already have a pretty good flush, or it could be that he's drawing with like the king with the king of hearts or something. So you don't know. There's a lot of scenarios for a quick call. I'm not exactly happy with the call, but I don't think I'm totally scared yet, because I still have outs to a boat and quads. So I'm just going to take it to the river and see what happens.
Yeah, you're right. There is some danger that the quick call is a made hand that has his beat, but more likely it's a draw. So, you know, he's got a five, he's got a nine, he's got a, you know, one heart. That's more likely in my opinion. So we'll have to see what happens here on the river. But I feel pretty good right now, pending what that river card is.
Okay.
All right, with a pot of $147, the river is the queen of clubs, making the final board six of hearts, seven of clubs, eight of hearts, ace of hearts, queen of clubs. We are first to act with 480 left in our stack, and our villain has us covered.
I think I'm going to bet $50. I think maybe he has ace-queen. He's just made two pair. The quick call would say to me that he could have had the queen of hearts in his hand, ace-queen, queen of hearts, two pair. I feel like we're going to get some good money out of this. I don't know. I'm putting myself out there. I have no idea. But really, if he had an overpair, he would have bet that flop. If he had ace-queen with, like, the queen of hearts, then, you know, he might have done what he had done before, check, check. But still, I don't understand why he wouldn't bet, you know, just a C-bet. So that was a little fishy early on. The turn was just a call. So it seems like he wasn't afraid of us hitting a fourth heart. So I feel like I'm a little worried here, but I still feel like I got a bet. I mean, you could check and for pot control and just call whatever he bets as long as it's reasonable. But yeah. 3/8, I don't think I'm going anywhere at 3/8. I don't care how wet the board is. It's not like he's got Broadway. I don't think he has 9/10. He could have 9/10, but wouldn't he still want to see bet that to make it look like? So it just seems like he's not protecting his hand as well as he would with a straight.
And yeah, again, that made straight. There's no reason not to bet that flop.
Right, exactly. Especially with the way he took control of the hand. So, I don't know. I think I'm just going to – I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll check call. I don't think he's going to go crazy and put us all in for a $147 pot. He's a thinking player. Maybe he would. But we looks like we checked and then tried to steal it. And then now if we chicken out and check, he might just value bet. Because he thinks he has a hand now that we were just trying to bluff him, and then we can call it comfortably. If the guy thinks that we have a hand and he's going to try to, and he has a big hand that we're going to call with, then he might try to overbet. But maybe I check call. I don't know. Let me think.
Yeah, here's my argument for check calling here is maybe I'll end up with egg in my face here, but I really think we have the best hand here.
Yeah.
So. If I believe I have the best hand here, it's all about how to get the most value out of this hand, right? So the traditional way would be like, yeah, that $50 value bet and hope that he calls light and we get the $50 out of him, right? You know, then there's that other new school way of betting really big, like 100 or even the pot to try to make it look like we're stealing the pot and have him call light and then we get 150 out of him instead of 50. Both plausible. The other one, though, is to check here and let him bluff at it. And either, you know, obviously if it's a sizable bet, we can call. If it's not, then we could raise if we wanted to. But I think on balance, I think I'm going to get more value by checking here and letting him bluff at me.
Please tell me you did the air quotes when you said new school.
New school?
Okay, so I think we're going to. I think I'm going to change my mind and I'm going to check too. I think I'm going to check as well and then let him bet whatever he wants. And if it's something crazy, then I have to analyze it. I know he's a thinking player, but let's check behind. See, check and see what happens behind us.
Yeah. And I will say I certainly am not opposed to a bet here as well, too. I just think, based on where I feel we are here, I'm going to get more money out of this hand by checking and letting him bluff. But,
okay.
All right. Okay. Vic says, if we're not already beat, how much can we bet and hope to get called by a worse hand? If he raises, what can we do? In other words, what's the plan? I don't think his range includes any straights, as he would have continued on the flop. I think we can also rule out flushes, except the nut flush, as he would have raised my turn bet to protect against a fourth heart or the board pairing. I think we can also rule out queen, queen, as well as pocket aces. So we should definitely have the best hand unless he holds the nut flush. Now it's a matter of extracting the most value, as I don't think we can induce a bluff. Wow, look at them all in the same first time ever on the same.
Except he's going to bet, though. He's going to bet. That's the difference.
We decide on $120.
Wow.
After very little thought, the villain calls. We table our hand. He picks up his cards, looks at the board with melancholy thoughts of what might have been, and folds. Vic says it's good to be back in action. Oh, man, again.
So
it sucks.
I would say he hit the ace, or he made aces up, and that's why he called 120. He's not calling 120 with kings. And so I think he made aces up, and that's why he called. He was afraid. It was a wet board, really wet board. And I think the guy didn't want to raise that. I tell you what, that's some big-ass bet there. Because generally, you're betting value at the end, 130, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we said. That's the, air quotes again, new school way of, you know, extracting value is betting big with a made hand and in terms of making it look like you're bluffing. And so, I mean, and it obviously worked here, right? I mean, he didn't have his beat, and it's hard to imagine he had like a set of sevens or a set of sixes. So you're probably right. It was probably, you know, I don't know. Probably ace queen is the only thing that really makes sense at this point, because he would bet that flop with any piece of it, right? So I don't know.
But, right. If he had like ace eight, he would have, you know, if he had the case eight, he would have bet to protect it. If he had ace seven, he would have probably bet something to see what Vic was going to do. The fact that he checked behind means that he had a naked ace queen or even an ace king. And then when the turn came, we bet out and he just called. That was the interesting thing, though. Like, if you have ace queen there, ace king, why aren't you betting more on the turn?
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's still skeptical of what we're doing. I don't know. But yeah, it feels like he made aces or aces up. $120, it's got to be a decent hand to call that much.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it has to be a hand, obviously. You're not going to call without a hand.
Right.
But he had to feel like, yeah, we were stealing that, trying to steal that pot, which, again, it works. It worked in this case. I mean, it works a lot of times, so. And when it does work, I mean, that's almost three times as much value as if you would have bet the smaller amount. So it's kind of like that limit bet, right? You only have to be wrong or right once every 10 hands to make it worthwhile with the pots that are that big. So
yeah.
It's definitely an interesting way of playing going forward. Now, what I'm curious about is, if we checked, I think he definitely would have bet, right?
Yeah.
So, and I wonder if he would have bet slightly more than 120. So that's the question we don't know. So we're very happy we won this. We're very happy that we got 120 on the river, which most players probably wouldn't have gotten. But my lingering question is whether we would have got like another $27 out of this guy.
Yeah, like let's say you make it 50 to go, which is generally what you would bet on the river, is usually a third to half the pot. And then this guy now makes it 150. You know, or you don't bet at all. I mean, because you check first, and the guy makes it 50, and you make it 150. He probably calls that. You know what I mean? So, because that's probably what you would do. If he bets 50, which is what he normally would bet, you make it 150. Now you've got extra money out of another $30 or so, because you know he's going to call. Maybe not. Maybe he's scared when you raise him. I don't know. But he called 120, so he'd be probably willing to call 150. You know, another 100 after button 50. So, I think if you check, you might make more money there. But I tell you what, I never would have bet one whatever it was on the end there, 120.
It would be close. It'd be close. I mean, I was not expecting him to call the 120. So, I mean, really, we're haggling over.
$4. That's
but,
true.
You know, we're here talking about hands, right? So,
great to have Vic G back in the house, though, isn't it?
Good to have you back, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.